The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, got another question to respond to. Anonymous. So the person wrote, I did something very unskillful a few years ago and caused a lot of harm to someone I cared a lot about, and by extension, to myself. I spend a lot of time reliving moments from that experience and decisions that I made at the time, but the primary sense I have is one of disbelief, that I cannot understand how I could have made the decisions I did. I can't tell a story that makes sense about it to myself, let alone anyone else, like a therapist. It's like watching a terrible scene unfold, but my inner world and reasoning at the time feels inaccessible, and I feel a lot of judgment towards that version of myself. My question is two parts. Is truly understanding your past harmful actions essential to healing and moving forward? And two, is my sense of not understanding myself indicative that I'm not really looking honestly, that there are aspects of myself hiding that I haven't exposed to light? Or is it a function of oneself changing over time, anatta, not self, and so not really a problem? Thank you in advance if you're able to answer this question. So there is much, much in that question. It's the question of remorse and the long karmic reverberations of harm, and the opacity of our behavior to ourselves, the ways we surprise ourselves, and the kind of crumbling of the illusion of I know all of myself. It's forgiving that which we don't understand, blessing the past with awareness, honesty with oneself, a lot in there. So forgiving oneself is supported by understanding, but grieving doesn't exactly require understanding, just bearing witness. And to fully witness, including witnessing our own incomprehensibility as part of the witnessing. And there's so much we don't understand, but we can still place our grief on the altar and pay our respects. And part of seeking forgiveness, and I don't know the context at all, but part of seeking forgiveness is sometimes the willingness not to be forgiven. We have to bear that sometimes. Sometimes that's our kind of gift to the other for now. I do not insist on your forgiveness. We take our vows. We dedicate ourselves to non-harming, to not harming ourselves, not harming others. And you really know, you know, for people, the questioner, it's like, okay, you really know practice is no joke necessary. And yeah, the grief may be prolonged until our thirst for understanding is quenched. You know, if one doesn't know why one acted as one did, it's hard to feel like we've extracted all of the wisdom from that pain. And unless we tell a kind of coherent story of how the conditions leading to our behavior, our apparent decisions, it's hard to feel confident that we might prevent it from happening again. And it is, as if there's some illegible secret locked up in our memory, in our history, and that unsettles us. But sometimes understanding causality is very complex. And we understand really in two ways. We understand with reasons, which are kind of subjective account of why we behaved a certain way, the reasons I give, why I, whatever it is. And then causes, which are more, scientific, objective, third person facts established through systematic observation. But we can't see causality. The best we can do is give reasons. And our life is stitched together with the stories we tell about reasons. And still, reasons and causes don't always match. The stories we tell about why, about causality, are constrained by the data available to conscious awareness, right? But the world beneath the radar of awareness is infinitely larger than the world above it. In a way, you're being asked to forgive your delusion. You did not know what you were doing, And you, maybe we say lacked a kind of clear relationship with some parts of yourself. And that doesn't mean you're being dishonest with yourself. It's like, you don't have to perfectly understand, just have to be, try sincerely to understand, have to be willing to risk self-view in that exploration. And you, whoever you are, whoever wrote that, clearly have that courage. It's just that we're always a little more mysterious than we think we are. This strikes me as a kind of the disruptiveness of the unconscious, the unconscious forces that when they emerge, illuminate the limits of willful self-control. And where we are opaque to ourselves, what we do often emerges as a kind of over-disclosure. What we said means too much. What we did too much. We're exposed. And the gap between our preferred self-conception and our surprising behavior is often filled with shame. But it's really just a kind of jarring aspect of the insight into not self. Our self is not unified. We are, as Freud says, ambivalent animals. this kind of few lines from Adam Phillips is condensed. Wherever we hate, we love. Wherever we love, we hate. Someone can satisfy us. They can frustrate us. And if someone can frustrate us, we always believe that they can satisfy us. We are ambivalent about anything and everything that matters to us. We are ambivalent about ambivalence, about love and hate and sex and pleasure and each other and ourselves. We're never quite as obedient as we seem to be. Elsewhere, Phillips wrote that monogamy is a way of getting the versions of ourselves down to the minimum. I find that quite touching. Monogamy is the way of getting the versions of ourselves down to the minimum. Like that fidelity with another is an attempt at fidelity to one version of yourself. And there's some renunciation in that. And yeah, can we maintain fidelity to our preferred version of ourselves without, maybe we say, disavowing the other selves? And I think so, but maybe not always. Can we renounce without disowning? And can we rightfully grieve the unlived lives that shadow our life? We really are children about pleasure. I don't mean that harshly or disparagingly. I'm including myself in that, but we're children about physical and emotional pleasure. And maybe we can say that Buddhism is the path of becoming an adult about pleasure. In the mistake, in that memory, to which version of yourself did you have fidelity? And I don't know, I'm not excusing or something like that, but it's like sometimes our unconscious knows things that we don't. It's not a purely destructive force, it's not pure kilesa. Sometimes it's a kind of wildcat strike. An unauthorized action against the hegemony of our idealism. Oh no, we look. There is, as one yogi said to me, just love and heartbreak, love and heartbreak. And of course, even the heartbreak, we dedicate that to love. So I'm grateful for your question, and yeah, I wish you well. Okay.